Here we are, week 7. What and how to poke stories. This is fun. We're definitely going to do a pulse check. We're going to do a little bit more in the key agility of presence. Take a look at stories and what they're made of. We poked a little bit around this with myths, which are sort of like epic, larger meaning stories, but this has another flavor to it. The consequence of living in stories and what to poke with them, and then some practice time and potentially rewriting the script. So, this is the question for today, to open us, to take the pulse check. What happens to your pulse when you consider provoking something? Does it go up? Does it go down? What happened? And it's either going to go one of three places, up, down, or stay on an even keel. So the pulse of the moment tells you what's happening, not happening, and therefore where to shift from and to. So let me check with you all. What's happening with your pulse when you think of provoking the change that's being called for in your life? What happens to it?
Up. There we go.
So what happens?
This is Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
My pulse goes up, and
okay.
More important than that, it affects my sleep, and I wake up in the middle of the night with probably a gigantic hot flush, and then I can't go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with it when that happens? What's the meaning of the story you make up with it?
The story I've made up is that if I stand up, there's something about me laying in my bed that the world seems more ominous and black. And if I just stand up and get out of bed and stand up straight and walk to the bathroom and walk back, it seems like I have more peace of mind.
Hmm.
I have presence. I'm more mindful.
Okay. So is that, in a sense, and one could make up this story about it, in a sense that the whatever it is that you're about to provoke or you're provoking has a kind of weight about it, but when you stand up, you're entering it, which takes a lot of that weight off, and you're entering to meet it.
Yeah,
you're walking around in it in a different
mm-hmm.
way, yeah?
Yeah.
One could make that up.
I make up everything.
We all do. It's all we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all we do.
I constantly say, let's pretend. And my husband says, can't we do anything for real? Because everything I do is pretend.
Well, and the irony is everything that looks like it's real is pretend anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let's pretend that corporations are important. Let's pretend that football is important. You know? It's all we're doing in a game, in any game, and this goes back to the earlier question about game, but in any game, the element of the game, one of the crucial components of it, is that it is the place where, in let's pretend, we assign meaning to something. And it only means something because we say so, and then we get a whole bunch of others to agree with us. I mean, when you think about it, just look at traffic lights. We just, you know, say that green means go. Why that color? Could have been any other color. We just decided that green meant go, yellow meant caution, and red meant stop. And then we got a bunch of people to agree with it. I'm reminded of a movie long ago with Jeff Bridges and Karen, don't remember her last name, called Starman, in which this alien came down from the planet, from some other planet, and he was possessed in Jeff Bridges, and they were, as part of this whole thing, they were driving around the country, driving around through town, and she was quizzing him about, you know, driving, and what it was that he was learning about driving. She says, "What does green mean?" He says, "Go." And then she says, "What does yellow mean?" And he says, "Go faster." So there it is. We assign meaning to things. We make up the stories of them. So what? Who else? What does it do? What happens when you're considering provoking something, especially a significant something? When you sense you're gonna poke it and change it, and I mean really change it, not just, you know, like window dressing or paint.
For me, this is Steve, I become relaxed, so I'm assuming my pulse stays the same, or I think it just stays the same. I don't think it gets slower, but so I just become relaxed.
So are you relaxing into it at that time? Is it feeling like, well, yes, okay, time to go. I'm just relaxed with it now.
No, it's just, I don't know how to explain it. Just I get real calm. I don't get real tense or anxious about it.
Mm-hmm.
I get the same feeling when, you know, when there's a, I don't want to say disaster. I've never been involved in a disaster. But when there's an extremely anxious moment, I'm kind of the, you know, everybody around me is, you know, running around with their heads off, and I'm kind of the calm in the middle of the storm.
So you get very present.
Get very present, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the word.
Yeah. Nice.
This is Shirley. I also get very present, and I get excited because I see it as an opportunity. An opportunity for a new awareness, a new learning, a new stretch, a new breakthrough.
So none of those things at this point in your life have any anxiety about them anymore, do they?
No. No,
yeah.
Because it's an opportunity for me to experience and create something different, and also open up that space for someone else to step into something that they didn't know existed before, or whatever.
And how is it different? I want to ask this in general. How is it different when something or someone else is doing the provoking versus it's come to your awareness to provoke the change? How is it different in your experience?
Well, this is Shirley. If someone else is poking, it's all in how they start poking as to how I receive it, you know. And if I see it, then it's just an aha moment kind of thing, and an opportunity to piece together all of the different components that led to that moment of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have a different experience? When someone or something else is poking, meaning a circumstance, an event, all of a sudden bringing it to your attention.
The other thing, this is Steve, that does for me, it actually puts a little smile on my face because I know it's such a special moment. And it's going to be fun somehow.
Hmm, cool. So what are the areas and realms that are, for you, unpokeable? And I don't mean that can't be poked, because pretty much anything can be poked, but the ones that you all don't have a comfort with having it poked. Is money one of them? Is health one of them? Is relationship one of them? You know, we can get poked around our ideas about stuff, but we have some places where we're a little bit more tender. You know, like when a health event happens, it's a poke, actually. So what for you? What's there for you? Which are the ones? What's the one that's just got a little bit too much sensitivity on it for it to be poked?
For me, it would be relationships. Specifically, I'd say between me and my son. Because he hasn't spoken to me in probably 5 years.
Hmm.
And I have one other child. She's a daughter. So my son is 28 and she's 25. And so, every now and then, the subject will come up, and she'll say, "He's not talking to you because of this and that." And then I'll say, "You know, that's not the case." And I get really tense about it, but not as much so as in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have the same uneasy feeling when it does come up because I know that my son is making up a story as to why he doesn't want to talk, and it's frustrating because I can't do anything about it. So that's a tender subject where I get anxious.
And what's underneath that one, I hear, and I don't know if it's accurate, so I'll just offer this, is that what's really being poked is the experience of helplessness.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, helpless, yeah. Because it takes two.
It's the one where I can't do anything about it. I can't get him into a conversation to even complete it because he won't even get in a conversation. I'm helpless to affect this thing be out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, helpless, yes, yeah.
Which, by the way, is one that also gets poked with severe health issues. Especially chronic ones.
Mm.
It's like, no matter what I try, I can't get this done, and nobody can seem to do anything about it, and I'm a prisoner to the effect of it. Helplessness is a deep place to get poked. It's also one that can be addressed and resolved using things like the core and the sea. And then when the helplessness piece gets provoked, and it may need to be addressed a number of different times in a number of different aspects from the crayon method. And what I mean by the crayon method is that when you do the core technique with something that's the energy inside you, any of you, you may feel like, wow, that did complete itself and it resolved, and I feel like a whole bunch of space there, and it doesn't seem to have the same effect. And then you come across another circumstance, and there is helplessness yet again. And it feels like, wow, the thing that I worked on didn't go away. And it's not supposed to go away anyway. There's a big distinction between complete and get rid of. But more importantly, the way I've found that helps with that phenomenon to approach it is the recognition that, like in the 64 box or the 128 box of crayons, there are varying shades of red or varying shades of green or varying shades of blue or varying shades of yellow, right? So if you had a red crayon and right next to it was an orange red crayon, there's still the essence of it is red. So if you find yourself at any time revisiting a particular kind of essential energy, like helplessness, it may be that you addressed it in the red crayon, but you didn't. But right next to it, living almost in the same area, is the orange red crayon, in the same way you'd see them lined up in the box. And also, with respect to something like helplessness, it is such a foundational experience. There's going to be a lot of it with varying flavors. And it is one of the least desired or welcomed experiences for people, for most people, the experience of helplessness, because it is a primary experience, I mean. When you're born, it is one of the first experiences you have. If you're born and you come through that thing and you are connected to your food source and all of a sudden your food source is cut completely and the organism recognizes it, guess what? Helpless and traumatic level. So it's right there at the early stages. And then it just gets to play itself out in varying forms over the course of our lives. So that's one of those sensitive and tender areas, and the provocation of your son in this situation is one of those places where that's the door to that experience. Mm-hmm. Now, can you imagine what it would feel like that perhaps at some point it's mentioned, you know, your son doesn't want to talk to you, et cetera, and all of a sudden, you know, that's complete. And there's no energy on it, one way or the other, and you go, yep, that's the way it is right now. In the same
and
way
that
you would
I think most times, yeah.
Right.
But when it
but
comes
the energy
up
the piece in the background is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's how I feel most times, that, you know, there's nothing I could do about it. But then when it only if it comes up in a conversation with my daughter, that's when I get a little anxious about it.
Right. So I'm going to offer a distinction in the language that lets you know that it's still hanging out in there, in addition to the conversation with your daughter, and there's a distinction between there's nothing I can do about it and there's nothing there is to be done about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You hear the difference in those two?
Mm-hmm.
Could you repeat that one more time, please?
Yes, there's nothing I can do about it versus there's nothing there is to be done about it.
Thank you.
That was good.
And when you get to the place where there's nothing there is to be done about it, that's where peace will be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the spot where you look out. It's the same energy as looking out at the sky. If you can, any of you see your sky right now? And whatever you see is what you see. That's the sky. There's nothing there is to be done about the sky being the way it is right now. And the shift is that there's, for all of us, is that there's an attachment in a certain part of it there that still has us engaged in if there was something to be done, I would do it. So thank you, Steve. That's a wonderful example of, you've afforded us a wonderful example of the surface provocation provoking the what's underneath. And seeing through the tender area of the, pardon? Yes, Herminia?
Yeah. I was going to say, when you say that there's nothing to be done about it, would that also be the same as saying, as surrendering to what is?
No, it's more like assenting to what is.
Ascending. Okay.
Assenting. Yes, A-S-S-E-N-T. If you remember from the example of the river, the difference between surrender and assent.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Surrender is still, there's nothing I can do about it, so I surrender. Assenting is, this is actually the way it is, and I'm going to add my energy to it being that way. There's nothing there is to do about it. You're actually adding your endorsement that it is that way.
And it becomes a very powerful position.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It also takes whatever hook there is out of you. You know, to whatever hook that is in you takes it out of you. And out of them energetically as well. But it is one of those kind of odd things, like you can't go for that. That state of being. There is nothing to be done about it. So that will now open up the space for them to be with you. Because that's still playing with the doing something about it. Did everybody follow that? Sometimes we will try to go for the there is nothing to be done about it, because we have this intuition that potentially if you can get to that space, that'll open up the space and then they'll change. And that's likely. It's possible. But if it's done as part of an intention to shift it, then it's still back into the previous one of trying to do something about it. I liken that to the times when I was in high school and, you know, I wanted to go out with somebody. And what I noticed was the guys who seemed disinterested, genuinely disinterested, and the girls were the ones that the girls were attracted to. And so I would pretend to be disinterested. But it didn't work. Because you actually have to not care.
So it's being authentic to yourself.
It's being authentic to yourself, but it's more importantly, it's being authentic to what truly is. At this point in time, for Steve, there actually is nothing to be done about that. Because it's in the larger picture of things, it's going the way it is to go. And we don't know where it's taking us. You know, he doesn't know where it's taking him. He doesn't know where it's taking his son. You don't know where it's taking you. But it's going exactly the way it needs to go right now. And when or if it's time for it to change, it will. And in the interim, you know, we can all have a better experience by addressing what is being incompletely experienced in us. And the event, the scenario, is doing the provoking. So I know you're all kind of probably just like swirling around with that one a little bit. But I invite you to examine the places that you, if that are so sensitive or tender that when it gets poked, you just like go, oh, God, no, don't poke there. And then see what's underneath what that is. See what's calling to be completed. See what stories are looking to be stepped out of, and see where it takes you. So let's keep moving. Agility, the power of moving quickly and easily, nimbleness, that's what we're after. We're going to play with the agape technique for just a minute. Won't take long. Want to revisit this or visit this if you haven't already. Just going to ask everyone to just close your eyes for a moment. And as you do that, sound will be a little bit more acute. You may hear the sounds in your background. You may hear the sound of my voice a little bit easier. Nothing to do about that phenomenon. That's just what happens. You may notice that your sense of touch is enhanced, whether it's the kind of pressure-type touch of your hands on a chair arm or your bottom on the seat or your legs crossing your legs, or the sense of touch from the point of view of sensation, of temperature. Again, nothing to do about that. It's just what happens when you close your eyes. And you may notice that you have thoughts that come and go, much like a cloud in front of a blue sky on a partially cloudy day. It appears real and tangible. And then it disappears and another one floats in, or several are floating by all at the same time. Just notice that. And now just shift your awareness to that background, that blue sky, that silence from which all of those thoughts are born. You might still have the thoughts, but they won't be as prominent as the silence. Just let your awareness shift back into that silence. And just begin to notice that no matter how many thoughts you have, it's always there in the background. And now just notice that while it seems like that silent background is in your head, just if you allow yourself, you'll notice that it actually extends out past you. Past the walls of the room you're in. And let your awareness keep noticing that that silence is in the background of everything. Every object, as you extend further and further out past your region. And through every person, that silent background energy is there permeating everything. And keep letting your awareness notice. All the way through the state, the county, the country, keep letting it permeate the universe. Notice it all the way through everything. Now I'm going to invite you to do something in particular, and that is to simply, while you're holding this awareness that energy permeates everything, drop into that awareness at whatever location it may be, a person. And notice that that awareness, that silence, permeates all the way through from you to and through them as well. almost as if it was radiating all the way out from you in the form of a sound wave, if you're an auditory person, in the form of energy, if you're a visual person. So in this moment, what does it feel like to be connected through this awareness, through that background energy of silence energy? What does it feel like to be connected with that person now? What are some of the words that come to mind?
Warmth.
Warmth. Any other words out there?
Peace.
Peace.
Serenity.
Serenity.
Connection.
Connection. So now I'm just going to ask you to open your eyes and just let that presence be. Let yourself be. Let that energy be. Let the awareness be. This is an exercise, the Agape exercise. I invite you to practice as often as you can, because it is part of the presence, one of the agilities, the presence agility, also sensing acuity agility, that allows you to know without thinking what is going on in the client you're engaged with. And the reason you know without thinking is not that you've perceived a pattern or anything. It's that you have a connective experience of where they are, what's up for them, because your energy gets it.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
In practicing this, should we practice this like before a particular client call, or just practice it with some person out there in general, or what?
Yes and yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like, the question is kind of like, should I lift the barbells in my home, or should I lift them out at the beach? Yes. And yes.
My question is, core was about some feeling on the inside. C was about something that's future focused.
Yep.
So agape is, when do we take this out?
Well, well, that question was just part of it, which is practice it whenever, and
oh,
then
okay.
just before a client call. Or even just before a conversation, especially a difficult one.
Oh, practice it on ourselves.
Yes, with yourselves.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, there are other applications. The applications for this with a client is when they are feeling disconnected and in the illusion of separateness.
Disconnected with us or with any?
From events in the world, from their abilities, from their sense of what may or may not happen, because the agape exercise is tapping into the fundamental energy of the universe, which is everything. That kind of, from the spiritual point of view, it's oneness. From the quantum field point of view, it's all electrons, quarks, and muons, and whatever being connected. It is the interconnectedness. This one is the experience of the interconnectedness of everything. This is a great one for people who are working from the point of view of the conversation, looking for yourself where you're not. And that's the conversation you'll hear in clients when they get to the spot where they're going, well, if I don't get this promotion, then, etc. Because a lot of their goals, a lot of what they're striving for is trying to fill a hole in themselves. That doesn't exist. They only think it exists. So they think that if they get this boyfriend, that job, this raise, that car, this Olympic gold medal, then they'll be complete. This is a good one to augment the use of the gap for that particular thing. But more importantly, it's also one that is really valuable when people are feeling alone. And as a consequence of feeling alone, lonely, isolated, feeling like they have to do it all themselves, this helps support their connectedness with everything. It also helps support your own natural knowing. See, it's not just the presence of you that the agility is about. It's the presence of everything that the presence agility is about. This is all part of the evolutionary coaching model, which is related to coach as portal, meaning focusing, but not container, passage for energy, for information, for insight, for whatever it is, for natural knowing to come through. As long as we're imprisoned in the container called me, we only have access to what we, me, have acquired as information over the course of time, which is limited to X number of years of our life. When we are living from, and agape is a great exercise to practice for this, when we are living from the experience of coach as portal, as person as portal, but coach in particular as portal, then the entire quantum field of information can come pouring through at any given moment in time and inform or ask or challenge or provoke or evoke whatever is necessary. Even if it's just, even if it appears to be to us and to them off the wall. It is those moments when the bolt of lightning hits the client out of something you said, as simple as it may be, as simple as it may have been asked. as simple as it may have been reflected. And it hits on the bolt of lightning hits on the being level, not on the intellectual content level. Because to play merely on the content level and the intellectual level is to play with only one part of the player. That's like saying, okay, so, you know, for our coaching session, I'm just going to relate to your arm. Because that's really, you know, your right hand, your right arm, that's where you do everything. We're going to deal with that. Instead of the intellectual, the emotional, the physical, the spiritual level, all at the same time. Now, I will also report that it may seem or appear to you or to the other people at times that what's happening is a normal conversation. But it's not. Because something else is going on simultaneously in the meta layers and levels of what's occurring. As I've mentioned before, sometimes we may get to the place where all we do is talk about baseball or whatever the topic is, you know, we talk about baseball and they shift. And you go, what happened? They go, what happened? I don't know what happened in our last session, but I was different this week. And you go, okay. So does that answer your question, Steve?
Yes.
Cool.
I must say, though, that I'm tentative about using these techniques with clients because... never done it before, but I had a client this week. He was so stressed out. He was,
yeah.
And I could have used CORE with that. So I went to listen to your audio of CORE today. So I just got to get in there and just do it.
Yes, you could use CORE and C. And by the way, the agilities, the course in agilities is specifically about the practice of that, practice of all these techniques with other people. We use the agilities as the provocation so that saying what is, and then we provoke and use the practice of absencing all the stuff that would be in between you and the agility saying what is at any given time. Or provocative inquiry. Or illuminating awareness. Any of those. That's what that one's all about, is the actual practice in it.
Mm-hmm.
And practicing on yourself gives you a great entry point to it.
Okay.
And really, Michael, in reality, this can become who we are all the time.
Yes.
It's not about doing it at one moment, but it's about our becoming really, truly present with who we are.
Yes. And as a consequence of that, becoming truly present with what's naturally being called for. There are times when I hear stress in somebody and CORE is not what's called for in that moment. Something else is. However, when I'm attuned to presence, I don't have any question about whether or not it is in its application. Because as Tom Stone talked about it originally, he says the way it's about this phrase, spontaneously respond to the needs of the moment with the fullness of your being. And if that moment calls for an intellectual conversation, then it does. Not because that's all we have in our toolkit. It's because that's what the moment calls for. So, yes, we would presence this always.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
When you said to reach out to someone else,
mm-hmm.
it was me.
Yes. Good.
That was the other person.
Yeah.
That's not strange.
For me, nothing is strange in the world.
Let's be honest here.
Another
I live in California. Nothing is strange. I used to live on the streets of New York. Nothing is strange. I drive up to L.A. Nothing is strange.
So when I did that,
mm-hmm.
that's when the serenity and the peacefulness and
yes.
I should feel the flow going through me because that's really what it's about.
Yeah.
It's that flow of energy.
Through you.
Through me.
Yes. Did you? I want to point to that. Yes, I want to point that to that right now because it's very important, the language you just used. And I know you weren't picking it consciously in that sense of it. You could feel it going through you. That is distinct from going into you and being held by you. You get the difference of that.
Yeah, I had no control. It was just going through me.
Going through you.
Yes.
Yes.
But what it did was it gave me a freedom that I can't even articulate on. It was so it was like a peacefulness, that serenity. It's almost like my feet weren't planted on the ground. I was floating somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah. That's actually how we really are. And the game of the human experience is persistently pervasive with presenting us with the illusion of separate and objects. But yeah, that's what we really are. That's how it really is. You pulled the veil away. Nice.
That's what it was. I have six more to go.
Well, we'll get there. There's
okay.
lots of things to do. Okay, so let's keep moving with the stories. Agape, by the way, is an acronym for a greater awareness place everywhere. So if GAP is greater awareness place, meaning you have an awareness, a larger awareness of the sense of things, this awareness, this greater awareness, is extended now throughout the entire universe. So how could you not know what's going on with your client in the background? Agape also comes from the Greek for selfless universal love, or as we might term it today, unconditional love. This is why it's valuable to have this experience repeatedly, so that it becomes an even more present expression and experience, but equally because when you start to engage with your clients from this place, miraculous stuff can happen. So, what are stories? Now, there's a lot of words up here. A couple of things. It's an account or a report. It's an anecdote. It's a lie. My dog ate my homework. My dog hit the text send button. I didn't really mean to put up that semi-nude picture, but my dog hit the button. Often it was a tale. We have an oral tradition in the world of handing down the wisdom or the edited wisdom, so to speak, because each teller would tell a different version of the story as part of keeping things going until we got to the spot where we were writing things down. In a romantic legend, the hero is known in story. And the last one is my favorite. Is stories are what we use at night to put children to sleep. Which is why if people repeat their stories to you, they don't get that that's actually what's going on. They're putting you to sleep. sometimes. Stories. Now, this is really important here because this is what they're made of. Interpretations of what went on. They're not factual. By virtue of the fact that we're observing it from whatever perspective we're observing it from, it is therefore an interpretation intrinsically. It's a limited perspective based on where we're standing when we observed whatever we saw. That also includes preconditioned viewpoints. So experiences and stuff that we've had, input we've had in the past, inform and start to put the color of the sunglasses on that we wear in that particular moment. You know, I wear the sunglasses of being a child of the 60s. You know, in the age of Aquarius, etc. It starts to have me view current events through those lenses and how it related to it. It comes from our memory, which is flawed at best from the point of view of not only being inaccurate, but limited in its perspective and in interpretation. We think our memories are truths. They're not. They're edited. Details go into stories, and I put up a new word there, veracify, to lend some veracity, some truth to the story. Details are added to it. Embellishments, you know, they make the story more interesting. And agendas, internal desires for influence in a particular direction. And lastly, and this is the real key piece, the stories are made up of identifications, a sense of self derived from the story's repetition. I am a survivor. I am a this. I am a this. You hear that a lot with people who have had a major injury or something like that. I'm a cancer survivor. That now becomes their identity. It almost becomes a badge of honor, but beyond that, it becomes their identity. No, that's not what you are. That's about an event that happened in your life. However, you are so much more than that. But people get caught in that sense of self derived from the story's repetition. In the same way that we were talking about, you know, people being caught in mental models and paradigms and beliefs and stuff like that from the point of view of steelworkers. This is the story. I've been a steelworker all my life. My family were steelworkers. My parents were steelworkers. My grandparents were steelworkers. That's who we are. The unicorn story. There was a story from a play by Tom Stoppard called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is quite a wonderful frame because in the play Hamlet, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are these two characters who are subordinate in the court, and they come on for maybe one or two scenes. Tom Stoppard revisited the entire thing, and he told it from the play from the point of view of these two characters. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and Hamlet was just a bit player in their life, which was quite an interesting shift in the perspective. And at one point in the play, they talk about this story about a man who sees a unicorn, and he keeps relating the tale, and each time there's a level of skepticism that people apply to it as they try and rationalize this miracle. And it eventually gets reduced to, oh, look, there's a horse with an arrow in its head. As people attempt to rationalize the story to some level of reality that fits and feels comfortable. But what I found most interesting in that play was the whole notion of turning the tails. That while I may be a lead character in my life, I'm a bit player in most of everybody else's life. And in some people's plays, I'm not even on stage at all. So we tend to think of ourselves not only as the hero in our own story and live from that perspective, but especially in a work environment, people tend to think that no one else has any valid perspective. And here's what stories really are: an edited version of reality. It's not a truth. In the same way that we have these programs on television that say this is a reality show, no, it isn't.
Never.
It never has been. Even the best of them is not a reality show. They are selected, edited, prompted, sometimes almost scripted by the poking and provocation of a different kind by producers to get people to be in a dramatic scene, and then they edit that scene so that you see them in a particular light. That's the way our lives are. And we even do our own internal editing. So the consequences here is that stories have desired and undesired consequences. There's some desirable ones, you know, entertainment, inspiration. It's a great thing for stories. It builds affinity with people when you're doing presentations, etc. And, you know, sometimes it is desirable to put the kids to sleep. And undesirable delusions, fears, limitations, traps, unconscious reinforcement of untenable positions, and basically inertia. We poke the undesirables. Why? It's not reality in the first place. The first and foremost place to poke is that it's a story and not reality. And you can poke in any of these things. Any of these places, the sense of self, the sense of meaning invested in the story. What if it doesn't mean that? The limitation demanded by the story? Well, I can only do this. Really? As long as that story keeps perpetuating itself, yeah, you're probably right. The seeming path created by the story? This is the path I must travel? Really? That whole feeling of power or powerlessness created by the story. The self-righteousness of the truth of the story. You see this a lot in people who are, you know, claiming victimness. And then trying to leverage that as a means of having power.
That's what my son is doing.
Yep.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
Well, and...
For the most part, I mean, yeah.
And it's a story. It's
it
not the reality.
Yeah. Right.
It's not the reality. The reality is far more complex than he's perceiving. He's reduced it to a story with certain details that he's selected and edited.
I'm glad I'm part of his excuse, though.
Well, you're always going to be part of his story.
I am connected with him still, which is good.
Yeah. That's right. You get to be the villain.
Yes.
Yeah, you're Richard III. Yes, I actually at one point with my son, I imagined, because his mom and I, we really did support him a lot in his years, and we didn't force him down any particular tunnels of profession or career or, you know, how he was supposed to be for the most part. And we imagined, we made up a story about what his life was going to be in the future. And that he would be, at some point in time, he would be on a therapist's couch saying, "And my father and mother both supported me. I didn't have anything to rebel against. So I could never find out. I was not like the other kids. They just loved me." Okay, so These are some of our regular and familiar friends, story-poking obstacles. Fear in the center, the loss of the sense of one's ability to act and effectively influence their life. Poke the areas of identifications, you know, this is who I am. Or the unknown, again. And the unknown one in particular is going to be related to the sea. The unknown is about what will happen or what might happen or what we're afraid won't happen if I give this story up. This is going to be one of the key things. Actually, I'm going to be doing one of those. I'll get a new picture up there. It'll be me inside a Zorb. That's what it's called, a Zorb. That's that little plastic thing that you can roll around the landscape in New Zealand. It's called a Zorb. I actually thought that was quite a fascinating connection because people do get absorbed in their stories, which is kind of like being inside their stories, and that's what it's like. From inside the story, all of that that's made up, as you look at that picture, inside the story, it seems like you're rolling around contacting the universe. You're going over the bumps, etc. But you're not feeling that bump. There's something in between you and that bump. There's something in between you and that thing you want to touch. It's the story. It's remarkable to me, human beings' propensity and mastery of making up disaster stories for our future. I mean, we have a direction. We have stories that we can make up in either direction, right? If we're going to make them up. We have stories that we're going to make up in either direction, and yet we have a gravity toward how it's going to turn out badly.
That's what our government is doing right now.
That's what everybody's doing. You know, worst case scenario. Hey, look at how many times do you hear that phrase versus the phrase best case scenario? How often do people say, so, what's the best case scenario of that one? How often do we ask that question with our clients? What's the best case scenario? So you're going to launch a workshop. What's the best case scenario in terms of enrollment? And even then, there'll be a little flavor of something bad. Well, I'll get so many people, I won't know what to do with it. It'll crash my website. It's like people used to talk about going on Oprah because of what it might do for their business. They'd go, wow, that'd be great, isn't it? Yeah. And then one of the first things that people would start to gravitate toward was how many people's businesses got crushed by all of the business they almost immediately got from being on Oprah. Oh God, what is the fascination with that? My best case scenario here is that everybody on this call goes out and is brilliant in provoking people past their limitations so that every person they provoke is wildly successful in ways that are deeply satisfying and meaningful for them. That's my best case scenario. And as a consequence of that, more people come to this, and I get to do this, and I get to actually then train people in doing this, which makes it spread even farther and faster. That's my best case scenario. I don't have a worst case scenario.
So what is it about fear that's always present, that seems to pop in all the time? Is it just a learned behavior, something we're taught of it because of environment or life experiences?
It's two things. We're hardwired for fear because there is an aspect in the primitive brain that is about being able to assess danger. Okay? The second part of it is part of what you're talking about, which is because we don't experience danger as part of our regular and daily survival from the point of view of, you know, like at first it was like, you know, you walk out there, you could get eaten. And there were lots of dangerous things, there are poisonous plants in the world, there's dangerous things. If you broke a limb, you could probably die from it. If you got a cut, you could get sepsis and die from it. I mean, there was a point in history, in human history, where danger was a very prevalent thing. So we have a kind of DNA coding, you know, aside from the way the brain is built, that sets us up for fear as a valuable asset from the point of view of alerting us to danger, literal danger. However, at this point in history, there is not near as much of that actual literal danger. So what do? We have a part of our wiring that is geared for the perception of danger. So what's the best way to keep that thing in shape? Create a false sense of danger. Because it would be related to keeping the survival muscle going. We have become masterful at making crap up that we have to fear. And that's been part of the culture.
And we use fear as protection then.
Originally,
yeah.
Originally, it had great value because it was used more often as protection. That doesn't mean we didn't start some projecting even earlier on in an anthropological basis. You know, we would hear a sound in the night and project the fear that whatever it was going to come into our cave and eat us. But nevertheless, the world was originally a much more dangerous place than it is now. So we have part of our being, our organism, that is created to alert us to danger. And if there isn't true danger, then we'll interpret the environment as dangerous in some way. That's my take on it. That's why the C technique takes you outside of the story about that danger, so that you can perceive it as a story. It's a made-up story. This is the shift. And it was spoken about earlier. You know, if we present this, we would be living from the experience of possibility and opportunity. You see a door. If that door is closed, people look at that door and they go, I don't know. Where could that lead? I don't know. I don't want to open it. I don't know what's on the other side of it. I know what it's like when it's closed. I'm in this room. I'm safe. If I open that door, and then the mind goes, there could be death on the other side of it. There could be disaster on the other side of it. There could be something I'm not going to want to feel, see, or experience on the other side of it. Instead of, open the door and you go, wow, look at that. Look at that open space and what we might do with it. The fear is about the projection grounded in uncertainty of what we don't know. And we're not all that comfortable with uncertainty. So, this is your work for this week, practice time. What stories are you living from? Pick an area. Pick the one that feels the most tender, if you like. What stories are you living from around your work, your health, your past, money, love, possibility, I don't know, friends, family, your body? What stories are you living from? And then get yourself free of the story and rewrite the script while still knowing it's just a script, but it's a new movie you're living into. first clear the old story, you know, get the recognition of it, have, and I mean experience being outside that story using the C technique. And this, by the way, would be a great time. You know what, Steve, I love what you've started out, you know, like when can I use this? I have concern about using this. I think this would be a great time for y'all to just sort of connect the dots here and let me know if you want to have a buddy. Send me an email and say, I'd like to have a buddy so that I can practice these tools with them. And then I will take out of the list of people, because it's an opt-in deal. You know, not everybody has to have a buddy, but it's an opt-in deal, and I will try to position you geographically close with somebody who is there, which makes it easier for you just time zone-wise, geographically, for you to practice with them. But again, only opt into the buddy option if you want to practice with that. This would be great. You could help each other clear the script, and then you could imagine the script. And you could even be in the conversation and go, okay, as the person is creating a script, if you do that verbally in the exchange, then you go, I don't know, mind if I poke that? Because it seems like you've just put in a different level of limitation. So this week, just if you want to play buddy, send me an email by, today is Tuesday, send me an email by Friday. No, by Thursday. And I will connect the dots, Thursday my time, which is Friday for you, Herminia. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So Thursday my time. And then I will connect the dots and see if I can connect whoever wants to be connected with someone so that you can practice these things. And in the beginning, it's simple. Read the script. You've got the MP3s as a model. You've got a script that you can just print out and sit in front of you. And I guarantee you, it will work with the script. Okay? So, let's close. What has been either provoked or released out of our exchange today? I'd like to hear from as many people as I can, please.
Actually, Michael, this is Margie. I actually don't think I per se got that answer, but I looked at what I most got out of the call today, at least
mm-hmm.
I was able to join, and that is to really start working on the agape as much as possible.
Great. Then that's what's been provoked.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a limitation has been released about the use of it. Something.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Steve. That was my moment. That was my moment tonight as well. Yeah. Dear God.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, one could do a lot worse than work on that for a bit. That's great.
I needed that. I just heard from my cousin who's 44 waiting to graduate to heaven. That's going to happen any moment. So I connected
yes.
with him. Yeah. That's
how
was
wonderful.
Really, yeah, that was wonderful, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, you know that actually in that scenario, I don't know if are you going to be present with that cousin?
Yes.
Well, if you get a chance, it might be quite a wonderful exercise for them.
Oh, am I going to? No, I'm not. I'm sorry. No,
okay.
I'm not
yeah.
going to be present. No, not when he's still
okay.
living. No. No.
Well, you just were present with him, by the way, as well. But yeah, physically present.
It felt like it, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That was powerful.
Yeah.
Thank you for that gift.
You're welcome.
This is Shirley. There are a lot of things that came up for me today, and I'm still percolating, so to speak. But one thing that really stands out, of course, is the agape and that present piece. But another thing is about poking underneath that sensitive part.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something very special about that, because I recognize it in myself and my sensitivity, and also I see it so often in others.
Yes.
And their sensitivity, and what a sacred space that is, or place.
Yes.
Within each of us.
Yep. Yeah, it really is. And there's, and the reason the sensitivity is there is that it's alerting us to a very vulnerable place that, while it is special, in many cases it's also a limitation.
Yeah.
Who else?
This is Emilia.
Yes.
There's lots of been poked, but to me, I think the story that's running my life, the concurrent stories, several stories that's happening, it would be good to have a look at them.
Oh, good. Well, yeah. You know, reach out. If you want to get some help in getting you free of those stories, reach out.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. We'll find a way to get you connected.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, because sometimes part of the challenge is that we're in the story so deeply that it may even be hard for us to prompt the C technique ourselves. That's part of the value of you all being able to learn this and have a mastery of it, is that when you have the mastery of it with other people as well, you can get to a bunch of them with yourself, but I still use other people at times to get to ones where I just know I am so enmeshed in that story. You know? So it's always useful to have other people to play with on this.
Because, like, this is Emilia again, because
yes.
Like one story can feed another story in another area.
Yes.
And then can get, like, all entangled or meshed up together.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a mashup.
Yes. A mashup of different stories.
Of course, yeah.
Like reality, and yet it's not.
Oh, well, yeah, actually, that's the way it is, isn't it? Yes. Our lives are a mashup of stories that look like reality, and they're not.
Yes.
Okay, is there anyone else who wants to share before we close?
I'll just say that I'm going to get better stories.
Very good.
Wouldn't it be nice
That's
if there
great.
Was like a little store?
Really?
It's called Better Stories.
Library.
Where are you going? I'm going to the Better Stories store. Cool. Well, we'll see you all next week, ready to play some more.
Ready.
Okay. Bye. Thank
Great.
You all.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye,
Michael. Bye, everyone.